Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast. My name is Paul Ellis, and I'm your host for these programs about developments in this fast-growing industry. The Wall Street Green Summit is a two-day deep dive into sustainability at scale. We gather the experts and share their knowledge. I'm quoting Peter Fusaro, who launched this annual event in 2002 for the benefit of investors, asset managers, and founders in climate tech, clean energy solutions, and solving new problems in sustainability. The summit celebrates its 24th New York City anniversary this year, with in-person attendees gathering at the Cornell Club, just a block from Grand Central Station, on March 18th and 19th for two full days of learning and networking with their peers. Today, we're fortunate to have Peter Fusaro join us for this episode of the Sustainable Finance Podcast, which is a Wall Street Green Summit media sponsor for the fourth year in a row in 2025. Hello, Peter, and welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast again.
Paul, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Great. Well, Peter, we're going to get right into the nitty-gritty here and talk about right now, what's going on. The negative impacts of climate change are accelerating every year, and so is the creation of climate-resilient technology to anticipate and reduce those impacts. So please tell our followers some of the new topics and emphasis for the upcoming Wall Street Green Summit on March 18th and 19th.
Yes, we've been covering AI and sustainability for the last 5 years, but we're doing a deeper dive this year on AI, specifically AI for methane emissions. Methane is 20 times the intensity of CO2. AI for the grid. We're talking about microgrids and the grid resilience issue is starting to percolate, specifically because of data farms and the increased use of AI. So we're kind of tracking that. We have a number of startups to showcase, and we're also international. We have folks coming in from Europe and Israel. We also cover the carbon markets as usual and decarbonization. We have a couple of takes on that. The issue is that we're losing time. We've blown through 1.5 degrees Celsius, which was kind of the Paris Accord number. My number is always 2 degrees C, and it looks like we're having some of the more deleterious effects of climate change. So the climate tech solutions, which are a suite of solutions, are really more important now than ever before.
Okay, now, Peter, we have a new administration coming in Washington. And what do you think the impact of the new Trump regime will be on climate tech?
Not very much. I've worked for three presidents, Ford, Carter, Reagan, when I was at the Department of Energy. Yes, one thing that will stop is the deployment of funding for the IRA, the climate bill. It's about half deployed, about half won't be deployed. They seem to have a lot of animus to the Green New Deal. There is no Green New Deal at the federal level. Oil and gas production will incrementally go up. We're already the world's largest oil and gas producer. What this administration fails to realize is that the industry has been using technology for the last 25 years, knows where energy is located and exploits those molecules. So that's kind of a nice thing to say. They're not going to drop energy prices. They're not going to drop electricity prices. They're market driven. So I don't think the impact will be as bad as people think it will be, specifically because the idea behind the IRA is to jumpstart the private sector. I just looked up this morning what was deployed in 2023 in this whole clean energy decarbonization realm. It's $1.8 trillion. That's a small amount of money since we need about $6 to $7 trillion a year for the next 25 years. So we have a long way to go. I also think there'll be a de-emphasis, and it's already happening, on ESG and DEI. That's nice, but the point is we'll just rebrand them. So I actually look at the private sector driving this train, specifically sovereign wealth funds, high net worth and family offices, impact investors, and strategics. This is not going away. The train's left the station, and it just won't be a federally driven mandate. They don't like climate. They don't even believe in climate change, which is ridiculous. When you have 14,000 papers on climate change and the data is in, we got a problem. I think most people in this sector already realize that, and the energy transition won't stop. That's going to continue. Energy companies, and I worked for a major multinational oil company many years ago, think in 40-year cycles, 4-0. Oh, this is the beginning of the transition. They'll look at operational efficiency to reduce emissions. They're already looking at capping and flaring methane emissions. There are issues that the Biden administration tried to address. They're going to continue anyway. The other thing, don't forget, big energy companies are multinational. They are active in 80 to 100 countries around the world. They don't want different rules in the United States than the rest of the world. In fact, the CEO of Exxon has already said that. So I think that this is moving forward. More capital is needed to make this happen faster. And we are seeing a number of new technologies come to the fore.
Okay, so as you just mentioned, the global clean energy transition continues to accelerate, but so does global energy demand. Do you see any kind of tipping point either way in that mix over the next few years, over the next 3 years, let's say?
Well, I don't see a tipping point per se, but I do see the U.S., which is the world's largest oil and gas producer, actually increasing its LNG, liquefied natural gas imports. That's going to happen. But simultaneously, solar will be deployed more, batteries will be deployed more. Wind is having some teething problems right now. There's been some cancellation delays in that sphere. But geothermal is getting a big uplift for the last year and a half. I'm seeing that go forward. So I actually look at the whole thing as energies, British thermal units, BTUs. And so therefore, you know, yes, the grid needs to be more resilient. Yes, the utility sector is underspent for the last 25 years, and data centers, AI, and data mining, crypto specifically, it looks like that might be 8% of energy demand in the U.S. alone by 2030. It was 2% in 2020. So there is a need for new energy capacity, both fossil energy and clean energy.
Good. Now, in 2025, what areas of accelerating development do you see in climate tech arenas?
Batteries, and not just lithium ion batteries.
Okay.
We're looking at a lot of movement in capital markets to fund larger scale batteries, deploy more battery technology, such as zinc air batteries, flow batteries. We're looking at other kinds of material science. There is a problem everybody's aware of with lithium ion batteries with heat. So we're looking at other kinds of energy storage. It's important to marry that to solar and wind farms, obviously, because of the intermittency issue. But we're also starting to see a lot of interest again in the built environment, the buildings. In New York City, where I live, has 950,000 buildings. Most are not green. Most are not sustainable. So there's an opportunity here to using AI to start retrofitting existing buildings. And I looked at something over the Climate Week called the Digital Twins. It was quite interesting looking at how they can look at the heating and cooling system, the boilers, the lighting systems, and model that as a digital twin. So I think we're going to see a lot of uplift now in the building, what we call the building envelope. So we're going to start seeing more activity. Why are they going to do this? Because they're going to make more money selling, basically better buildings, greener buildings. But it's really in the U.S., it's a retrofit market. New building construction is all green. It's all LEED certified. It's not even an issue anymore. So I see a lot of activity of AI and the built environment as number two. The other part is transportation. I still think EVs, electrification, is going to move forward globally. China, I looked at the numbers last week, record amount of sales. Well, I don't know what's going to happen with the tariffs, but all the original equipment manufacturers can make electric vehicles. Hydrogen still kind of behind the curve, hydrogen fuel cell vehicles, hydrogen storage. But I'm seeing, you know, trains running on hydrogen, ships running on hydrogen, but still an outlier. More mainstream will still be energy storage, solar, and a very vast use of AI for big data, large language models to use the data, which is going to become very important on how we model the next generation of technologies to be deployed.
Peter, I'm really glad to hear you speaking about the improvements and the use of AI, but that also seems to be one of the pain points and a challenge for a lot of people in the fields of in climate tech in general. So talk a little bit about that, if you will.
Well, it does use energy. That seems to be the big problem. Obviously, we've heard announcements of recommissioning idle nuclear capacity, including Three Mile Island. We'll see. I've looked a lot at fusion recently, and it's very long dated, perhaps 2032, 2035. I actually see the more immediate need for the grid and for utilities will be natural gas and clean energy. They're not going to back away from existing infrastructure. And don't forget, corporations volitionally buy clean energy. They're not mandated to buy clean energy. Now, why are they doing that? Because they want to attract young talent. Young people are much more environmentally and sustainability conscious. So I see I've always said natural gas and renewables together. I think the coal age is over in the United States, not in the rest of the world. They're still burning a lot of coal in China. They're still burning a lot of coal in India and many parts of Asia. So coal is still here, but we've reduced coal burn from 55% to less than 20% of nameplate capacity. What has refilled there has been natural gas and renewables. And renewables will continue to keep growing, specifically solar, wind, geothermal, and depending on the landscape of what part of the country. So, and here's the rub, more jobs and renewables are created in red states. So I don't think there's going to be a lot of pushback on investment tax credits, although who knows what the new omnibus bill is going to look like. I think it's going to be dead on arrival, having worked through the capacity of the House and Senate to get anything done. And it takes time and you have to compromise. So I actually think for the climate tech sector, it's still going forward. There's a lot of interest from strategic investors. Why? Because they're not inventing tomorrow's technology. They are buying technology companies that are, you know, basically more advanced, are scaling and be commercialized. And we're seeing this across the board in every sector. So it's data, it's technology, and the finance is not a problem. There's plenty of money, capital available globally. And I also interact with the sovereigns and they're very interested in this sector as well.
So, Peter, now that you've mentioned capital, let's talk about the new service that you are launching at the summit this year, the Capital Introduction Service. Talk a little bit about that. So people who are going to attend and people who will want to find out about it after the fact can learn more about Capital Introduction.
Yeah, we're calling it Wall Street Green Cap Intro.
Okay.
It's a platform developed in the hedge fund industry. It's very familiar in the hedge fund industry to introduce hedge funds to sources of capital. So I have the technology already built. What I've created with some interns and some professionals is 25 different climate tech sectors. So you don't want the person interested in food tech looking at battery storage, for example.
Right.
So we have over 2,500 startups. So we're looking at pre-seed, seed, and A round from $100,000 to $10 million is kind of the range. And I've just brought in somebody yesterday to do quite a bit of work on the investor side. Who the investor is going to be? Once again, strategic investors, venture capital funds, private equity funds, sovereign wealth funds, impact investors, etc. But the idea is meetings. This is we're not taking a fee for success. We are basically focusing on software as a service. Startups will pay a fee to engage for meetings over the course of the year. And I've just to give you some of the universe, in India, which I've been active in recently, there's 66,000 startups. In the United States, there's 78,000 startups. And I'm not saying they're all climate tech startups, but a significant portion of that are climate tech startups. So very simply, it's a matchmaking service to introduce startups who, you know, go through quite a bit of diligence and have the documentation, the pitch deck, the financial model already done. They're not reinventing anything. It's already done. Uploading that to the internet, to a platform. On the investor side, all investors have to be accredited investors. So we screen on that side as well. And then they have meetings. And I think the good news is, and I make a joke about it because everybody says there are no competitors. There are competitors. This is a good thing. I actually think competitors are a good thing because it's proof of concept. I think my unique selling proposition is I've been to 50 countries. This is going to be a global platform. This will be active in Singapore, Japan, the UAE, Western and Eastern Europe, Latin America, as well as North America. So that's my unique proposition. I know quite a few people all over the world who are very engaged in this sector. And to be blunt, we want to accelerate, once again, the movement of capital into the startup world, because the startups are going to be the growth industry and acquired by the larger technology companies. So I talked to one of the largest venture capital funds in Canada. He got it. He says, well, I've got a couple of portfolio companies on one side, and I'm very interested because I want to see tomorrow's technology. So everybody wins is kind of the way I'm looking at this.
Peter, it sounds like the summit this year is going to be a great opportunity for startup companies to attend and network and learn more about this new launch. We're looking forward to it. I know I'm going to be moderating a couple of the sessions again this year, and it's a very exciting year for what you have put together over a long period of time. And I personally want to thank you and professionally very much for what you're doing and have been doing. And let our followers know how they can get in touch with you about the Wall Street Green Summit on the 18th and 19th of March, and how to register for the summit. And also, let's give them information on how they can contact you about questions that have come up related to the material that we've covered in today's program.
Sure. It's very simple. If you Google Wall Street Green Summit, it comes up at the top of the search engine. But the website, very simply, is www.thewallstreetgreensummit.com. If you want to reach me, it's also on the website, peterpusaro@gmail.com. I want to keep things very simple because I'm interacting with a lot of folks from around the world. It's very interesting. For this year, we've got people coming from Australia, people coming from Slovenia, people coming from Israel, London. So it's a global summit, but it is. So there are activities. And it's all in person. I'm not going the hybrid route anymore.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your time this morning, Peter. I know you've got a lot of additional contacts to make on a weekly basis between now and the summit, and we look forward to seeing you and everybody who follows and wants to attend the summit. They should register as soon as possible. And I'm Paul Ellis, and this is the Sustainable Finance Podcast.